Good morning. Are we ready to start? Everything's ready. Thank you. Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here, for your leadership and engagement with our executive committee here. We will go ahead and commence our meeting at 10 a.m. We have a quorum, and now we'll have Cindy go over our meeting procedures.
Thank you, Chair. We're grateful to have Edward C. Little Water Recycling Facility host us and have audiovisual support from AGP staff. Restrooms are through the door to my right and down the hall. For parking validation, a parking validation machine will be located in the lobby after the meeting. If you need Wi-Fi, the network is WB Public Wi-Fi, which should connect you automatically. This meeting is in a hybrid format in which members and the public are participating both remotely and in person. For remote participants, if you need technical support connecting to or using the Zoom meeting platform, please email it@agpvideo.com. This email is also listed on the meeting agenda if you need to reference it. Now I will provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting. You must be in the room or on Zoom to make public comment. Members of the public may request to comment in the following ways. One, if you're in person, please fill out a speaker card located at back table and hand it to Luke or I. If you're participating via Zoom, you can raise your hand virtually when we reach the item under which you'd like to speak. The raise hand function is at the bottom of the screen on the Zoom app. If you're calling in over the phone, dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. This meeting is being recorded and live streamed, so we ask that you please speak clearly. Please remember to turn on your microphone when you speak and turn it off when you finish speaking. That concludes the overview of meeting logistics. Chair, I recommend we move to member roll call for attendance and introductions.
Thank you, Cindy. Let's go ahead with roll call.
Thank you. I will be calling by last name, beginning with Edward Caldwell.
Present.
Thank you. Tom Ford.
Present.
Thank you. Jamie King.
Present.
Thank you. Karen Mogus.
Present.
Thank you. Carrie Nichols.
Present.
Thank you. Michael Quill.
Present.
Thank you. Martha Tremblay.
Present.
Thank you. I'm going to check the Zoom. Yes. Perfect. That concludes our roll call. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Cindy. Moving on with our agenda, the first item are comments from members of the public on items that are not on the agenda. Do we have any requests for a public comment?
Hi, Chair. We do have one request for public comment. This comes from Walter Lamb. Could you please display a timer just so I can track my time as I read this from Walter Lamb? Okay, you could start it. The Biona Wetlands Land Trust has submitted the following written comments to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission with the hope that they will be read into the record at the Governing Board's May 21st meeting. The draft revised environmental impact report for the Biona Wetlands Restoration Project is currently anticipated to be published in early June with a 45-day comment period. There is a long and well-documented history of the Commission's past involvement in the planning process for the restoration of the wetlands. The Commission's Governing Board also approved an action plan in February, followed by a work plan in April, both of which list the Commission as a collaborating partner in the restoration planning process. Serving in a support role, the approval of these documents reflects the Governing Board's understanding that Commission staff have the discretion to provide technical expertise and input on the project as appropriate. Submitting technical comments on the draft REIR would fall squarely within this approved scope of involvement. The Land Trust's goal at this point is simply for the record to reflect that members of the Executive Committee and Governing Board are fully informed that Commission staff currently have no plans to comment on the revised EIR, and that this is a deliberate choice of the Commission and not merely an oversight. You could stop the timer. And again, that was from Walter Lamb. No other requests for public comment.
Thank you, Luke. With that, let's go ahead and move to executive committee business. On that, item 2A is the order of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda in front of us? All right, hearing none, let's move on. Next item 2B is the report from the Administrative Director and the National Estuary Program. So that'll be Luke and Tom. Luke, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. And before beginning, I would just like to note that Erica Yelensky has joined us online. Sorry, I'm pulling up my notes. Okay. So regarding commission staff business, commission staff continue to work with the Bay Foundation to draft the semi-annual report, which was submitted to the USEPA, or will be submitted in May this month. Commission staff also continued working with the Technical Advisory Committee chair and Prop 50 grant recipient, Dr. Dan Pondella, on the Rocky Reef chapter of the State of the Bay report. So there will be a brief update on that later on, and a full update for the governing board in June if the proposed agenda is approved. And regarding the rest of the project, staff continued to administer the four remaining grants. So we have two research grants and then one grant installing stormwater infrastructure in Culver City. Moving on, commission staff will begin working on an update to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission website. We hope to provide these State of the Bay chapters on the website, and we are also exploring the possibility of sharing information with member organizations on the website. We had a discussion on that at the last executive committee meeting, so that is still a work in progress. And commission staff have identified a final candidate for the environmental scientist vacancy, so hopefully a good update on that soon. And then finally, a TAC meeting took place on May 19th. At that meeting, TAC members provided input on the Rocky Reef State of the Bay chapter. They discussed how to shift focus and priorities in accordance with the new action plan and discussed how to leverage data and findings from the Southern California Bite Monitoring Program. That concludes my updates. Tom, go ahead. Oh, and sorry. Jacob Berman has joined as well.
And Jamie's online. I just don't know if we made that announcement. I may have missed it. Okay. Thank you. Yes, good morning. this is certainly a busy time of year for us with the days getting longer and the ocean often calming down. But I'll start with what has been a remarkable spring on the Palos Verdes Peninsula in regards to abalone recruitment and our encountering endangered white abalone. We've seen over 16 of them at this point in time, and 12 of them were in a fairly tight aggregation, which is remarkable. Haven't seen such a thing like that in decades. So that's big news. Along the lines of endangered species, I'll stay on that track. Did have a successful hatch and fledging of snowy plovers on Doc Wilder Beach. So yay, little babies. They're on the move. Good job, Dad, to get them through that first month in a very challenging environment at times. So very happy to see that. And we've also seen some of the first emergence of El Segundo blue butterflies in Manhattan Beach. About 50 or so of them are out. A little early in the season. Maybe it's warm. I don't know enough about butterflies to say much more about that. But we're encouraged that we might have another big year of that going on. We did have two nests of killdeer on Santa Monica State Beach. Unfortunately, both of those nests didn't make it. but it was very nice to see them there. Perhaps they may put down another clutch as it's still within their breeding season. Flipping back to Manhattan Beach. The American Shore and Beach Preservation Association released its list of best restored beaches for 2026. There are five of them around the country, and one of them is Manhattan Beach. The press is starting to go out on that. The social media is moving, there'll be a award presented at the centennial meeting of that association in New Jersey. So we'll be there in the fall to present on our work more broadly in the region on beaches and certainly focusing on Manhattan Beach. Sorry, hopping back up to Santa Monica. Timu Galeen's lab at UCLA has been supported with funding through the NEP to start to inform and build a model looking at circulation patterns surrounding the Santa Monica Pier breakwater. The 82-83 El Nino did topple that breakwater somewhat significantly. We're trying to get an understanding how those circulation patterns may correlate or have some causation and relationship to the poor water quality in that area, slash using these models may help us inform how we could move forward with augmentation or changing the configuration of that breakwater to provide protection for the pier from sea level rise and increased storminess, but also to see if there's some habitat values that we might be able to generate and some novel techniques to put back rocky intertidal habitat within the region. So more to come on that. Timu's team is presenting at the International Coastal Engineers Conference. They've got a tremendous poster. Once they're back and we get a chance to talk to them, I'd be happy to see if Timu's calendar, if it's of interest, to come in and give a brief presentation. Along those lines, some of those same investments, the beach user visitor study that was been led by Beacon. I know that we're considering those folks to come in and talk to us soon. Similarly, on beaches, Karen Martin, who serves on our technical advisory committee, she's an emeritus professor at Pepperdine University, has completed her Beach Ecology Coalition-led beach certification for folks that operate vehicles and other equipment on our beaches to do this in an ecological context. It's getting a lot of great reviews right now. It's an online training that we're encouraging folks like beaches and harbors, lifeguards, anybody that's down there working with machinery on our beaches to understand the context in which they are working. Adamson House, which is there at Surf Rider Point for everybody that's familiar, has certainly been experiencing some fairly dramatic erosion over the past several years. There is a breakwater that was put up after the 82-83 El Nino. Breakwall in the back, seawall in the back of the beach there. That's failing, and working with state parks, LA County Beaches and Harbors, Integral Consulting, and a few other folks trying to figure out how to use cobbles from the watershed or from the Santa Monica Mountains to reconfigure the back of that beach, reduce erosional forcing, protect the cultural assets that are there at the site, and that's moving forward. We're getting to a point where we may be in a construction window later this year or next. Jamie could correct me if I, okay, she's pumping her fist, so I'm thinking that means that we're, I got it right. So we're very excited to see that moving forward. And the vessel that was approved for purchase through IIJA funds for the Bay Foundation is now in Ventura getting worked on so that we can get that thing in the water and get that to service to further our goals offshore. I can stop there. I think that that's substantive enough for now. And I'll be talking to you folks later again in the agenda. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Luke, Tom. Any questions? I guess I just have something for Luke in terms of the EIR for Bayona. I know you're monitoring, and Jamie, I know you're online. I don't know if you can share an update on timing, but I know that's something that Luke will continue to look for, and in terms of it. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, so... Oh, I'm sorry, Jamie. Sorry. Okay. So, Luke.
Yeah, I can speak on that. Yeah, we don't have Aaron from CDFW with us today, the information I have is just from the publicly posted website. So yeah, we will have to wait and see if they release something in June.
Okay, great. Sorry, Jamie, wrong agency, but
no worries. I was just curious if we know what the, could somebody repeat the date when we expect the EIR to be released?
As far as I know, no exact date has been proposed.
Okay. All right. Erica?
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. Sorry I was late to join. Sorry, I can hear my voice. Tom, I had a question for you. How long do the juvenile snowy plovers stay in the enclosure, or do they tend to fledge pretty early? Thanks.
Oh, okay. I think that echo was because I didn't turn my mic off. Sorry, guys. yeah, Erica, I'm, again, not an ornithologist, but what I understand is the chicks usually spend about a month once they hatch, and the enclosure and when that's placed and when that's removed is under the direction of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I think they usually keep it in place for about a month. so it looks like a wire box, essentially, and it's especially there to prevent other wildlife from getting in to that area where the chicks, you know, had been, where the eggs had been laid in the nest and where the chicks retreat back to during this period of time when they're learning to forage and starting to fledge. So about a month's time is what it takes.
Thank you for that. And also, I appreciated all of the IIJA project updates, and it's just exciting to see that so many of them are coming to fruition. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you.
And Chair, I actually have a question, if that's all right. You mentioned the infrastructure around Adamson House and its relation to protecting against sea level rise. I just wanted to clarify, is the degradation of that infrastructure related to ongoing sea level rise, or is it just wear and tear?
Sorry to place caveats, not a coastal engineer. As to, you know, the cause of the failure of that break wall, I couldn't speak to the how that structure failed. There has been persistent erosion along that coastline. It's probably driven by a number of factors, but sea level rise has been happening, is ongoing. I think we've seen, you know, depends who you talk to, but around 12 inches of sea level rise over this past 100 years. We're expecting the rate of that sea level rise to accelerate. much of the sea level rise that we've experienced is associated with the thermal expansion of the ocean itself, just absorbing heat and those molecules moving farther apart, so the water takes up more volume. We're now moving into a space where ice caps melting, glaciers melting, are starting to contribute what was a great deal of terrestrially held water into the ocean. So now more water flowing. If the concern was is that there are cultural assets associated with that property that were starting to wash out, be exposed to the tide, maybe being carried away during wave events. So that was a bunch of the rationale for getting to work there. I don't know, Jamie, if you wanted to speak to this as well.
Sure. And realize I'm not a parks employee anymore. But the issues at Adamson House are a combination. It really is sea level rise. Like, that building and facility has been there for a very long time. And so just with time, the oceans have been creeping up and impacting that. And so I know Parks is really happy to have the opportunity to have that being addressed, just given the cultural and biological significance of that area.
And Jamie, we'll see if we can get you associated with yet another agency at some point in time here during today's meeting.
And thank you. The root of the question really was about just what is the current state of affairs with sea level rise. And so thank you for also, you know, addressing the heart of that.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jacob.
Any other questions? EJ.
This is a question, but maybe a comment to or a request to possibly have an update or a presentation. It seems to me, and I do live in the area, that we've received far more notices or reports of juvenile white great white sharks in the Santa Monica Bay. And they talk a little bit more about kind of their why they're there, why they thrive there. And I wanted to better understand kind of the health of the Santa Monica Bay and why we're seeing that increase in reports or sightings. And I don't know if it's greater now than it was, but it seems like now we have a lot more reports. And I wanted to maybe warn about it myself, but I also thought the general public could better understand their purpose and why they're here and really the health of the Santa Monica Bay.
Yeah, thanks, EJ. And, you know, Chris Lowe is someone that we've long relied on in this region. And although he is retired, he may still be interested in coming in. He would be the foremost expert locally. This body did authorize us to purchase a few receivers to work within that network that is used to track tagged juvenile white sharks in this region. And so we did have when in our semi-annual report, once that's approved, that'll be shared. They enjoy the area up in the northern, easternmost section of our bay. It seems to be where we get most of the detections. It's one of the more quiescent areas in the bay. It's warmer up there. It may be that there's a lot of opportunity for forage for them. They eat a lot of bottom fish at this stage of their life. I think the drones are also something to do with this. There are these. There's just more frequent observations because people have the ability to now observe them. I've never seen a big one in the bay, but I've seen a few small ones, and I saw one this past weekend breaching off of Dockweiler Beach, even. They are definitely out there, and we support that work to better understand what's happening with the sharks, to protect them and to protect people and people's curiosity and interests in them as well. So we're happy to track down Chris and see if he's got something more substantive to share or somebody from his lab.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, EJ. And I know we're going to talk about it in a bit, but for next commission meeting, there is a presentation from our TAC on the Rocky Reef State of the Bay chapter. We do have a TAC, and this would be something that I'm definitely interested in hearing more of what the TAC is doing, more of the findings and results, and as new developments come up, that they're able to kind of share with us their perspective in terms of where we are and what is the state of the Bay. So thank you for that. Anyone else? All right. Let's move on then. The next item is consideration of approval for the March 26th Executive Committee meeting. March 26th. And again, thank you, Luke and Cindy, for the very detailed meeting minutes. I know I didn't have any revisions. Are there any revisions from anyone else? If not, is there a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
Great. Thank you. Cindy, let's go ahead and do a roll call vote, please.
Thank you. One moment while I share my screen.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I did get my hand up, but I don't think I got it up fast enough.
What is it?
In regards to the minutes, I think there might be one thing I'd like us to quickly consider. It's under 2B, and in the final paragraph mentions that I propose that the SMBNEP or the commission serve as the interim lead to facilitate discussions. I don't remember doing that. I think that was part of the discussion of trying to identify a lead there, but I don't think it's attributed to me. I don't know if it was Luke or it may have been somebody else around the table.
It might have been me, actually.
It may have been.
That's fine. We can make that correction.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sorry, Tom. Can you direct me to where that is again?
Yes. So it's the top of page 2, final paragraph under 2B.
Under 2B, okay. Final
and
paragraph.
It says that Ford proposed that the SMB and EPR Commission serve as the interim lead. And I believe we should, if Martha's in agreement, maybe that should read Tremblay. If I'm...
Oh, sorry. Let me track the change. I apologize. And while I'm doing this, Eric, could you please let us know if we need a another motion?
Okay. Yes. You do need another motion to approve with these edits.
And I'm happy to amend my motion to include those edits.
And I'm happy to second.
Great. Okay, we have a first and second. Cindy, can we do a roll call vote?
Yes, let me share my screen. The order is randomly generated. When I call your name, please state your vote. Karen Mogis?
Yes.
Thank you. Michael Quill?
Yes.
Thank you. Jacob Berman?
Yes.
Thank you. Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Thank you. Carrie Nichols?
Yes.
Thank you. Edward Caldwell?
Yes.
Thank you. And Jamie King?
Yes.
Thank you. We have 7 yes votes. The motion is approved.
Thank you, Cindy. The next item is consideration of approval of the adaptation strategy that was sent to the executive committee, and Luke informed me that it was actually sent to all of the commission members for review, and this was an item that the commission delegated to the executive committee to approve on their behalf, since this needs to be submitted to EPA by June 1st. So Luke, let's go ahead and hear your report.
Thank you, Chair. I have a few slides just to present the background. The details will be presented by Tom Ford. Give me one moment while these display. Okay, so we are talking about an amendment to the action plan. And the amendment is this: the inclusion of this adaptation strategy. So a bit of background on the action plan. I know you already know a lot of this, but I'll be brief. The CCMP outlines a collaborative approach to restoring Santa Monica Bay, and the action plan is just one component of the CCMP, and it describes long-term actions, roles, metrics, and milestones, and that action plan was last updated and adopted by the governing board in February 2026. And although that action plan was adopted by the governing board, it is still under review by the US EPA. And while it has been under review, the EPA has requested an amendment to ensure that the adaptation strategy requirement of the action plan is met. And this amendment is actually needed in this action plan to aid the US EPA in their review of the 2027 work plan. So that work plan, which was adopted in April by the governing board, is based on the updated action plan. So in order for the EPA to review it, they need a complete action plan. And actually, I will hand it over to Tom to take over from here. And let me know if anybody has any questions as to how we got to this point in time. Okay. Tom, you have slides, so I'll share those.
Thank you, Luke. And Erica, I'm happy to invite you to contribute to this at any point as well. But once those slides come up, I think it'll help us orient to some more of the substance behind this. Yay. That is a California poppy, and it is a specific variant that lives along our coastlines, and that is now starting to emerge in a number of the restoration sites that we've placed along there. So I thought it was just nice to have some flowers this time of year. Next slide, please. So the adaptation strategy, as Luke introduced, is a requirement for us to have our action plan, as well as the work plan associated with it to move through. And this is exactly how it is described in the current National Estuary Program guidance that came out in the spring of last year. So it is asking us to explain how CCMP actions are implemented to address vulnerabilities in the estuary. And there is a specific list of these recurring extreme weather events that we're expected to attempt to address if a given activity, action, or goal is relevant in this case, or designed to address it, or that the action itself may be impacted by these recurring extreme weather events. So if we can get to the next slide. Here it is. To reduce the risk of effects of recurring extreme weather events and other environmental changes to CCMP goals, they should include a symbol or a label in the action plan. So we've already accomplished that. That plan that was approved by the governing board had those black triangles associated with a number of activities. So this piece of the adaptation strategy has already been completed, and within the guidance, we decided to nest it inside our action plan. Now, the furtherance of this strategy is this addendum that we're considering today. So let's go to the next slide. All right. So this is the part that what was presented earlier to you folks for your review and consideration of what has now been built out, and that is what the substance of the strategy is, that we're identifying which environmental recurring extreme weather event stressors is being based upon the vulnerability assessment. And I'm sorry, there's a lot of different documents here, and so anybody can stop me at any time. The vulnerability assessment that we are building from is from 2016. It was authored by myself, Luke's predecessor, informed by the TAC and a very large group of contributors. It was deemed to still be relevant to our work. We recognize, and this was discussed at the TAC meeting on Tuesday, that we need to advance our comprehensive monitoring plan and, subsequent to that, inform a new vulnerability assessment. What we're being directed by the EPA is to pull from our existing vulnerability assessment and plug in the risks identified in that old plan. So we will have some examples of that coming up later. Yeah, feel good. Let's move on to the next slide, please. Here is a reminder of the activities that were identified, subset of the overall activities in the action plan that were considered to be adaptation strategies. So restoring kelp forests, enhancing beach dunes, enhancing coastal bluff, restoring seagrass, developing offshore artificial reefs and coastal lagoons. These various projects relate to sea level rise, warmer waters, warmer winters, warmer temperatures. They may have effects or means to mitigate drought. They are all specified further in the draft of the strategy that I've shared with you. Next slide, please. So those were all under goal one, which was habitat enhancement and habitat and biodiversity enhancement. Goal number two, water quality and availability, looks at a number of programs here. The first one, supporting the Safe Clean Water Program, largely interacts with non-storm water runoff, some wet weather runoff. The other subset of these, Pure Water Los Angeles, Pure Water Southern California, Pure Water Las Virgenes, and recycled water production at the West Basin Municipal Water District in the draft that I've provided you really interrelate with drought and ocean acidification. And again, those are all itemized in the plan. I'm happy to go through that with you. I mean, in the strategy, pardon me. Next slide. So here's just trying to get more into the structure of this to help inform you, because I know you folks had to turn this around quite quickly. There is a prescribed list of stressors. So that is, as I summarized earlier, but say it again, warmer summers, warmer winters, warmer waters, increasing drought, increasing storminess, sea level rise, and ocean acidification. So if a given activity could be impacted by these or has the ability to offset or mitigate some of the effect of these environmental stressors manifesting in Santa Monica Bay, that's what we're trying to get at. Next slide, please. Now, the risk addressed, as I pointed to earlier, are not coming from the EPA. That is not the guidance saying, here's your recurring extreme weather events, here's your list of stressors. These are risks that were identified in that process that concluded in 2016. It is populated in a series of large tables associated with those 30 pages in the vulnerability assessment. And that's where those risk address lists that you see coming out in the strategy are derived from. That's a little video of King Harbor flooding again. I don't know if we want to take the time to watch it, but it was a good reminder. Yeah, go ahead, hit it. It takes us only a few seconds. All right, that is supposed to be a sidewalk leading to gangways to get onto docks, but it was overtopped by the king tides this past year. Next slide, please. So a nice physical representation of sea level rise starting to affect our coastline more broadly. I've picked out two of these activities and put up those risks addressed so that I could bring those to the surface to help everyone. So here's we're restoring kelp forests. We understand a lot of the benefits and values of kelp forests off of our coast. Restoring them was determined to be in our interest, now more than a decade ago. And how does restoring kelp forests interact with those stressors? Kelp becomes stressed due to warmer water, reducing reproduction and slowing restoration response. That was what was developed again in 2016. As we address in the strategy, hey, if we can restore kelp at deeper depths, we can get below that top layer of the ocean where warming often leads to stratification and this thermal related stress. The adult kelp plants that are in that deeper water are able to access nutrients. They can stay reproductively active, adding resilience to the system. Similarly, kelp at those deeper depths will experience less wave energy at their base, which may reduce the likelihood of them being ripped out, having a few remaining adults around the entire year or for a year out there leads again to, a more rapid recovery, aids in resilience of the system. Sea level rise may shift the distribution of kelp dependent upon depth. I don't think we're there yet, but over time we may see that happen. Changes in coastal phytoplankton community and food web may also interact with or be addressed by restoring these kelp forests. When we put back large, dense stands of kelps, and Dr. Nichols can correct me if she likes, we actually affect the physical flow of the water through those kelp forests. It is often reduced significantly or substantively, and that reduces the larval pump, the amount of larvae moving into these kelp forests, which can reduce the settlement of purple sea urchins and other grazers that we often are having to manage for at this point in time off of our coast. So that's what's cooked into that. Here's an example of one of, this is Terry Herzik, one of our contractors who spent 10 years and over 10,000 hours underwater restoring kelp forests here in Los Angeles. That's him working off of Palos Verdes, selectively reducing purple sea urchins using a geology hammer, and the fish find that not to be entertaining but to be worth hanging around because they get a lot of little bits to eat. Next slide, please. I chose activity 2.2.2, support Pure Water Southern California, because I know that we've got folks in the room here who are expert on this. The notion of the risks addressed, again, pulled verbatim from that 2016 vulnerability assessment, is that more severe drought may lead to more water conservation and the reduction of non-stormwater discharge. The way I see that applying in this case is that we are looking at a number of large investments involving the recycling and purification of wastewater in the region. And that is a reduction of non-stormwater discharge to the bay volumetrically. Recognize that nutrient loading associated with the discharge of recycled wastewater or discharge of treated wastewater can contribute to local ocean acidification, and trying to inform and manage that. Great set of presentations and discussion earlier this week at Hyperion in the nutrient reduction workshop that I attended. And certainly nutrients serve as fertilizer, roughly speaking, for phytoplankton communities. So the amount of nutrients that are in our bay, the time that they are in our bay, the seasonality, a number of other things, all have fairly profound or can have profound effects on the phytoplankton community and the food web. So if I was to have a different set of choices from a vulnerability assessment that might be more closely aligned to some of our more contemporary practices and interests here in the region, you know, that list might look a little different. But again, working with what tools were available to us. And I think that's...
Okay, so you're saying this is verbatim from 2016, and because it's verbatim to 2016, there's no changing.
The guidance that we've received and the feedback from the EPA has, go and take it from your assessment and put it in there. The folks helping guide this were communicating directly to us that, hey, those risks are already identified in your vulnerability assessment, and you're going to go grab those and you're going to put them in there.
Yeah, the risk, but if the description there's not quite right... I think in general it's okay, but well, anyway, I know I have specific comments on this.
I'm certain.
I think the safe, clean water item too, some specific stuff too, for accuracy, I guess.
Yeah, no, I'm more than happy to receive those. I'm more than happy to try to respond and inform. You know, the decisions or what's been placed in here, and again, appreciate everybody's quick turnaround on this, thank you for your expertise and your discretion in trying to make this document as effective and accurate as it must be. Thank you. So where would you like to go, Martha?
Okay, so let's open it up for any general thoughts. I know you all received this on Monday, and I think Tom explained in terms of what the focus was. Any thoughts before I know I have some questions and suggestions. So EJ, do you want to go?
I just want to confirm. So this is due June 1st.
Correct.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? I would like to ask a question about how parts of the vulnerability assessment map on, because there's the goals. So there's the stressors were set by the EPA, correct? And then you have these different goals, which mention some things that could also be interpreted as stressors. And then there's the table with the risks. So I'm just trying to understand, like, are the goals something we should also be integrating or no?
Just a little clarification on what you're assigning goals to, meaning goal one, goal two, goal three, goal four.
Of yeah, the in the vulnerability plan. Assessment, there's 14 goals. And so okay. I'm just curious about the goals versus the...
Okay.
Maybe the goals are to understood. Address the risk.
Yeah, so those specific activities that are identified in here? Sorry, Gary, I'm trying to keep up with you.
Would it be helpful to display the document?
I think what she's referring to is there's a disconnect between the vulnerability report was drafted in 2016, where we had a variety of goals that have now been modified under the latest revision of the CCMP action plan that we did this year. So they don't map out exactly.
No, well, this is in the actual 2016 climate.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
That was based on the previous goals. Okay. This year, we updated our action plan and now have a total of 6 goals with a variety of activities under each goal. So the mapping is not one-to-one there, but what he's referring to in terms of the original stressors that were identified for our CCMP, where he's being consistent with that. Does that sound accurate?
Somebody got smart and turned off my mic. Okay. Understand the point of confusion, and I think Martha has addressed it quite capably. We had an old action plan that had a different structure, a number of these elements that we're looking at in this adaptation strategy wouldn't map to it, but not directly. Also, that list of risks that are assigned in that vulnerability assessment certainly eclipse those that we've been told we need to address in this adaptation strategy. I think the maybe getting ahead of you a step when we assess and start to inform the next vulnerability assessment, we won't be limited to these identified stressors, but we will have to include and address these identified stressors in that effort.
Okay, so maybe just to wrap us up here, the adaptation strategy for what we're working on now is just very specific to these stressors and to risks that were previously listed, even though there are other things that we would need to adapt to.
Agreed.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
Erica's hand is raised.
Okay, Erica.
Just following up on that, and I think the plan is to look at updating the vulnerability assessment, the CCVA, within the next few years. And I realize, like, the timing may feel off, but it's just, I think there's like a certain amount of work that, you know, the NEP can do at a time. So I appreciate everyone doing like the mental math between all of these documents. So thank you. And I don't have anything to add. I think that Tom and Luke covered everything well. So thank you.
Okay, Erica. Well, I have a series of questions for you. And I had given Luke some edits. And one, when I reviewed this document, I felt it was general. I did see the mapping with the role in terms of the stressors, and I did understand why it was. I understand that this is just a simplified version of something that we will come back to and develop, update our vulnerability assessment plan. I guess my concern is in looking at this that it just seemed very general, and I know that there is a lot of activity that is going on, a lot of work the Bay Foundation is doing, a lot of work that's being done through the BITE program that addresses some of these stressors. And but here, Erica, I'm going to rely on you in terms of what you consider will be acceptable for EPA purposes. There's one thing for EPA purposes. Sometimes that's the minimum. Sometimes for us, we need something more comprehensive that's more descriptive because it's guiding our actions. And I understand the timing and that at this point, if EPA is okay with what we're presenting, then I am okay with moving forward. But there were some items that maybe in the 2016 plan I did not review and did not update that I would prefer, if it's possible, to make some edits, that my edits be considered and incorporated. So, Luke, can you share?
And Martha, if I may, I know you were addressing Erica, but I sometimes skip through the large super headers and get right into the nuance of these things, right? Those detailed activities, the step-by-step work, it's identified in the action plan. The monitoring work that we will do will be in the monitoring plan. This is a strategy that's saying, hey, we know that we have to pay attention to these things. And we are paying attention to them. And these are the places that they intersect with our more detailed action plan. These will be, you know, future intersections where these correlate to monitoring priorities, and those will be in those plans. So I agree with you. We need that detail. I think that those details are inherently elsewhere in our universe of documents that we use to guide and inform our work. So I appreciate you pointing that out.
Just so I can say it in a way that makes sense in my mind, and make sure that's correct. So this is not intended on being an exhaustive list. Is that correct? It's intended on identifying certain aspects that are focuses, but not to restrict us from having other focuses of the work.
Yeah, no, this the identification of these issues herein were requested by the EPA in part, and I think this was actually something that was nested in what Carrie was speaking to as well, that there are concerns or interests to make sure that if we are investing capital funds, or, you know, these are funds that are being expended into capital projects, that those projects will endure and continue to provide those services that they were intended to do. Fortunately enough, and we are more and more in the minority of this due to the geography of our coastline, we're not sitting here at this point in time going, you know what, I'd like to make investments to save the Adamson House property because of erosion and sea level rise. Right now, we're still making, I think, a meaningful investment there, and that it will provide benefits to protect that coastline for 25 years to 50 years. If we were picking up that item 30 years from now, we might be sitting there and having to face the harder facts of there's no reason to invest $1.5 million there because it's not going to last and it's not going to provide its intended services. So that is the other cut inside this adaptation strategy, inside the structure and the request of that funding guidance that the EPA is asking of us. I don't know if that helps or was directly related, Jacob.
It helps, yes.
Erica's got her hand up.
Erica?
Thank you. I appreciate this discussion. And the adaptation strategy, I mean, it will be an appendix, part of the action plan. So I know you're seeing it in this order of, like, you've reviewed the action plan and then kind of looking at the adaptation strategy on its own. And as Tom said, it is part of that larger document where much of the detail should be. And I think these are living documents, so there will be, you know, opportunities, you know, with a plan to update appropriately. I think I think, Martha, one of your comments made me think, like, I know that in previous presentations, Luke's kind of had all of the documents, but I think, like, a graphic of how all of these intersect, like, that maybe we should put that together. Like, that kind of visual, I know, I find that, the Venn diagram helpful, and maybe I will try and do that, just so we understand. And this is new, like, you didn't look at an adaptation strategy in 2018-19, this came about with the, and maybe Tom said this, so apologies if I'm repeating, but the Protect and Restore America's Estuaries Act, which was an update to Section 320 of the Clean Water Act. So that was in the early 2020s. And this came about and kind of headquarters passed on this guidance to the NEPs. So most NEPs are doing this piece for the first time. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Erica. I did think at the beginning in the introduction, we should acknowledge that we do have the 2016 vulnerability assessment and that it is something that we will be updating. So a statement related to that, I think would be good since we were ahead of the game back in 2016 and having something like this already. And we will need to update it since now we have slightly same goals, just different numbering and detail, that sort of stuff.
And I believe there is a line item in the work plan budget for 2027 for an update of that document, correct, Tom?
We recognize that we're going to need resources to get this done. We're about midway through this fiscal year. It starts in October 1. And so it's a chance for us to look at our, you know, essentially our budget versus actual. We may be able to find some resources this year to get moving on this sooner than later. We're also trying to explore other opportunities to bring in a Sea Grant fellow or some type of other support so we can get somebody who's spending dedicated time on this rather than adding it to the list of other work that other folks currently have. I'm full agreement, Martha, to have that reference to the 2016 vulnerability assessment in the introduction. I think that's a great catch that will help people understand the root of this. And we did discuss this very same thing at the TAC meeting. That was 2 days ago, Tuesday, and the TAC was at least in concert on the idea that the CMP should move forward firstly, and then the vulnerability assessment come on the heels of that. I don't think we would have to wait for the entire CMP to be finalized for the vulnerability assessment to be starting and getting informed. So just trying to play a little bit of mental Tetris with that to see how that lines out.
Yeah, maybe just to underscore some of the clarifications in the front matter to just make it really clear that where the goals, the activities, the risks, and the stressors, where each of those pieces are coming from.
Thank you. Happily.
Great. Thank you. And can we move on, Luke, to the description for supporting the Safe Clean Water Program?
Yes. Could I please have my screen displayed? Thank you. Safe Clean Water Program.
Yeah, that was number 7, I believe. This one, Tom, I just want some clarification because I'm having a little trouble following. The stressor was identified as increasing drought, and the risks addressed were more drought may lead to more water conservation and reduction of non-stormwater discharge. From what I'm aware, the Safe Clean Water Program was intended to address water quality issues associated with runoff for both dry weather and wet weather, and impact on beneficial uses. So that's where I was kind of a little confused in terms of the stressor. Yes, increasing drought, less runoff? I guess it's a factor of... so that's why this one I was a little bit confused in terms of how we're describing it. I suggested to Luke that we follow up with Public Works to get input from them on this item since they are the leads for this effort. But if you're saying that this was in 2016, this is specifically identified for the Safe Clean Water Program as the stressors?
It was not identified to the Safe Clean Water Program. It was directed at water quality improvement.
Yes.
In the vulnerability, yes. in that, yeah, vulnerability assessment. So again, this is where the one-to-one relationship is not, yeah, present.
Okay. So there's opportunity here to modify this, and I know Public Works isn't here, but I would feel comfortable if Luke gets some input, if we're able to get some input from Public Works to make this factual, and you can share it with the executive committee for our review after the fact, unless if we can make an edit, some edits now that address it if we intend to approve this now as is. I just, in looking at this, because here we're highlighting specific items, I would like them to be reflective of what it is.
Yeah, I'll respond to what you're sharing, Martha, so I can give you my thoughts on the matter, and then I have a way, I think, to do what you're requesting of us. Some of those Safe Clean Water Program investments, from my understanding, you know, are directed at fairly large volumes of water that are being captured and infiltrated, meant to augment, you know, adjudicated groundwater basins that aid in and are a,
yes,
response,
they're intended, to drought, water
and
quality,
water conservation,
and water supply. They, right, have two objectives. Yes,
right. So then, I think that's where our 2016 language is going. All right, drought conservation and the reduction of non-stormwater discharge. I feel that the Safe Clean Water Program addresses those and does that. The water quality issues assigned to the performance of the Clean Water Program is leading to fewer bacterial load exceedances. I recognize that it says due to fewer storm events, which is a little confounding. Changes in the coastal phytoplankton community and food web, again, is a relationship to the nutrient reduction associated with capturing, treating, and infiltrating the water. If that first one, more severe drought may lead to, is where you're, is causing you to get hung up in this matter, we could strike it entirely and I think still meet the intent of what this adaptation strategy asks us to do.
Luke, I think you contacted Public Works on this, didn't you?
I did contact Public Works, but I did not receive a response, probably due to short notice, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would think, I think the stressors, just increasing drought there, just, you need something else. I mean, this is it's a water quality issue. It's, water resilient. I guess what are the options here? When in seeing Safe Clean Water Program that it's addressing increasing drought, I just don't see the link, and that's where I'm hung up. I guess pick a different stressor. A different stressor to pick from.
You do need to add ocean acidification to the stressor because it's then listed under summary of adaptation relevance.
Yeah, if you're reducing nutrient loads or, that could be, that's a linkage there.
And again, so this was, I authored this. I'm the one that put this together. And thank you for that. I missed that getting the ocean acidification in there. And if it is the consensus of the executive committee that the Safe Clean Water Program does not interact or relate to drought directly enough to have that be some of the risks that we're trying to address, then this is your document to inform.
I mean, I guess I thought that groundwater infiltration makes sense for this. So I'm not quite sure. Maybe is it the Is it the sentence? Sorry, I scrolled up and now I'm scrolling back down.
Sorry, I have the document up if okay. You want to point me to it.
I mean, I think the Safe Clean Water Program does address increasing drought by increasing groundwater infiltration.
Is that the only stressor, though? I guess that's my concern is this.
Ocean acidification needs to be added, but I'm not sure if the other EPA stressors, I forget, maybe we can look at the list of the EPA stressors that sure we're can. Allowed to pick
Warmer
from.
Warmer waters?
So, and there, if you're adding ocean acidification, it's basically because you have runoff discharges, wet weather, dry weather, mm-hmm. with nutrient loads. That's what you're referring to. Okay.
So, just to back up what Carrie's speaking to, right now there's an error of omission here under stressors for number 7, activity 2.1.2, that we need to add, the stressors could read increasing drought, mm-hmm. comma, ocean acidification, and that is how that is informed in the summary of adaptation relevance under number 7. So right now that's a typo or an omission. Mm-hmm. That
would and maybe importantly, like water quality is not a stressor in this context.
Correct.
Correct.
Which doesn't mean that we are lessening our commitment to water quality improvement. We're not throwing shade on it. I'm trying to be contemporary. The vibe for water quality is still strong. It's just not one of our stressors that we're being asked to speak to.
I have something that might provide some clarity. This is an extra slide from my presentation that I included here, and I believe the last item on this table on the right-hand column is the comprehensive list of all the stressors or risks addressed that US EPA guidance identified. So it sounds like we may need to attach some more of these to item 7.
Karen, do you want to speak to it?
Well, I'll just say two things. One is the introduction, the last sentence of the first paragraph of the introduction lists all of the stressors, and ocean acidification is one of them. And I think what we're acknowledging is that ocean acidification should be added to one of the stressors on number 7. Yeah?
Okay, sorry. Let me scroll to the list, and then we can go down to 7.
I guess, plus Bruce, Luke reminded me that the Safe Clean Water Program did not become a program until 2018, which is after 2016. So it's not in the 2016 vulnerability assessment.
Correct, but ocean acidification
is okay.
Dealing with drought is,
okay.
And that is where those were pulled from.
Okay.
Again, I know I'm just asking folks to stretch that space in order to get this done. And then what I anticipate and am eager to see happen is using this adaptation strategy. But mm-hmm. again, the upcoming vulnerability assessment and the upcoming CMP to pull these things back together again. And once that next vulnerability assessment is completed, then we're going to open this thing back up again and tune it up and get it right.
Okay.
I have a follow-up question then. So, when we do that, are we going to still be limited by the number of stressors or by those stressors that the EPA, those are the only stressors that we're considering?
Aside from the stress in this room, no. Mike's feeling it. No. Joking aside.
Should I update this language?
No. We need to stick with these. These stressors must be addressed. Additional stressors are not barred or excluded in any way. At this point in time, I would not even submit that there is any ordination or prioritization associated with this. We're Yeah, I like your list, but boy, those warm water ones better be the first ones that you deal with. That is still being left to our discretion. So I expect a fair number more stressors to show up.
Thank you.
I had a question. Yeah, my take on this is you have these, I mean, ocean acidification is an umbrella for a lot of stressors. So they're going to keep coming. So that's a good question, is that this is not a set limited list of stressors. That workshop this past week really opened my eyes up to, we got a lot more coming at us, including, you know, discharge of human feces. We know that's a big deal under the umbrella of ocean acidification. Am I wrong? Do we have to get into the weeds with every stressor, or is it it's open? Is it not?
Yeah. So
and increasing, Tom.
So my response, Michael, is that, again, this is a strategy. It's supposed to document and define, hey, these are the stressors, and this is where we see our action plan intersecting with these identified stressors. How we do that, what we do about that, relative scales of investment, all fall into the action plan, all fall into the monitoring program, and can be differently captured in our upcoming vulnerability assessment.
Okay, I'm okay with moving on. Let's go with that edit. Let's go to the next one. Or did you have, or PJ?
I just had a brief comment. You know, I think that as I read this, we're talking about a very complex program with a lot of complex issues, and it's summarized in a very abbreviated way. But I think this just reminds us that there is a specific need to coordinate with the LA County Public Works to really get their buy-in and their input. I know this past week they had an opportunity to host the LA County Water Plan. And I would tell you that although I missed last year's, I attended the first one, I found great value in attending that because it really reminded me that a lot of the things that I do and we do at West Basin Municipal Water District are working hand in hand with that water plan. And I would assume that their efforts would work hand in hand with our efforts here. And so this just reminds us that the work isn't done and we need to work closer together. And I asked this earlier, so this is due by June 1st. So I don't know that we'll be able to coordinate with LA County Public Works prior to this, but that doesn't mean that we can't continue to do that and get that stuff in order, take action possibly today, and then continue the work beyond that. So I just want to make that comment.
Thank you, EJ. All right. I'm okay. If I think
there are other edits to review, should I?
Yeah, I just review them. Let's go ahead with.
I can review what was changed based on feedback we received from members. So first piece of feedback was to link to US EPA guidance on for NEPs. So I've done that here in the introduction. So now there's a link that will take you to the US EPA's website where they have the guidance posted online.
Having the link there might be confusing because it kind of looks like you're going to the SMB NEP adaptation strategy.
Good point.
So maybe add just like SMB NEP adaptation strategy building off of the guidance or whatever, and then link to it that way or something.
Give me one moment. What do you think of this?
That's great.
Okay. Should I continue? Okay. Next one is a reference to the vulnerability assessment from 2016. So that was added here also in the introduction, just to make it clear that a lot of this document is based in that document. So in addition to this sentence, there's also a link to that vulnerability assessment, which was drafted in 2016. I will move on. We also, there were a few non-substantive edits made, but the remaining substantive edit is regarding ocean acidification. First one for item 8, support Pure Water Los Angeles. There was a comment regarding how it addresses ocean acidification, and there was clarification needed. Basically, water recycling programs only address ocean acidification if there is a nutrient reduction or removal component associated with those recycling programs. So this is language added here under Pure Water Los Angeles and Pure Water Southern California. I'll scroll down to that one. But it is a very similar edit. I'll scroll up to the other one because it's easier to read. Any questions or comments or modifications?
Luke, if you go down to number 10, there's just a typo sitting there. Further down, I believe. Oh, no, back up then. Sorry, it was in 9.
Right before, yeah. It's loading.
Loading is just misspelled. No, no big deal. And I believe Carrie's catch on the omission under number 7, where currently the stressors in this document, I think, are only is the only one that's identified, is increasing drought. We need to add ocean acidification there in this red line.
He did already.
Oh, he did that one? Okay, thanks. Sorry. I'm not sure if we caught it.
Was that it?
These are all the edits since it was provided on Monday.
All right. Is there a motion?
Motion to adopt this as edited.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right, Cindy, let's do the roll call vote.
One moment while I pull up the roster. Once again, this is in a random order. When I call your name, please state your vote. Jacob Berman?
Yes.
Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Jamie King?
Yes.
Thank you. Karen Mogus?
Yes.
Michael Quill?
Yes.
EJ Caldwell?
I vote yes, but as I mentioned, I would ask that the work, collaboration, and coordination continue.
Carrie Nichols?
Yes.
This item received 7 yes votes. And passes.
Great, thank you. And yes, we need to commit to update the assessment, the vulnerability assessment, and definitely we need to work with our stakeholders, and there is a lot of work going on within our region. Great work. All right, let's move on then to the next item, which is establishing the June 18 Governing Board meeting agenda. I believe there is a request for public comment for this, so we'll have Luke start us off with this item also.
Thank you, Chair. Could I have a timer for 2 minutes and 33 seconds? That's the remaining time for Walter Lamb. Give us one moment, please. Two minutes 33, if you could. Great, thank you. So this is from Walter Lamb. The Biona Wetlands Land Trust has submitted the following written comments to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission with the hope that they will be read into the record at the Governing Board's May 21st meeting. The Land Trust strongly supports adoption of a resolution that unequivocally reaffirms the Commission's recognition that climate change continues to threaten the sustainability of the plant as well as the health of Santa Monica Bay and its watershed, and also reaffirms the Commission's commitment to the principles of environmental justice. Despite the comments of one governing board member at a previous meeting, the work of the Commission is in no way analogous to the fictional movie, quote-unquote, Fight Club. A critically important component of the Commission's work as a public agency is to keep the community informed of that work using language that is based in science and not censored to align with various political headwinds. No actual evidence has ever been presented to suggest that the Trump administration has any legal authority to censor the Commission's work, which is conducted pursuant to the Federal Clean Water Act. The Land Trust urges the Commission to act quickly to adopt a clearly worded resolution on these important topics. Thank you, Walter Lamb. That is all the public comment we have on this item.
Great. Thank you, Luke. So for the June 18 Governing Board meeting agenda, did you have an additional report, Luke? I'm sorry.
No, but I was going to introduce each item, but let me know when you want me to.
Okay, go ahead and do that.
Thank you. So first, the first proposed agenda item for June 18th is a presentation of what would be Resolution 26-02 regarding climate change and support for disadvantaged communities. So this is an idea that has popped up last year, and possibly even as far back as February of last year. So currently, the US EPA prohibits references to disadvantaged communities and climate change, different terms associated with climate change, in certain federally submitted documents, which underscores the need for the Commission to reaffirm its commitment and governance actions while maintaining compliance with federal requirements. At the November 2025 Executive Committee meeting and subsequent Governing Board meeting in December, members stated that the Commission may want to consider adoption of a resolution that reaffirms the Commission's commitment to its goals and values. Commission staff are now prepared, finally, to draft a resolution and present it to the Governing Board in June, with adoption potentially up for consideration in August, or the following week, or sorry, following meeting month. So this item on the agenda for June would not be a voting item. This is merely a presentation of a resolution, which staff can draft with input from members if interest is there. Any thoughts or questions regarding this?
Luke, so in June you would have a draft to share. You would do the presentation and have a draft, and that way provide opportunity for the Commission members to give you input. And then in August it would be a voting item.
Yes, and my plan would actually be to provide the document to interested members who want to play a more in-depth role on the creation of this. I can reach out ahead of time to them and then provide this document ahead of the June meeting to everyone. Yes, Tom?
Yeah, Luke, I would encourage, and I'm happy to help you if if needed. I'm not sure that the attribution to the EPA is the actual origin of climate change, disadvantaged communities. I think that those are not a response solely or an internal generation of a priority from the EPA, but they were responsive to EOs by the executive to all federal agencies that these things are, you know, now, don't know what term to throw at it. I think that the attribution as to the source of why disadvantaged communities or climate change or other terminology has been pushed aside that we maybe spend the time to assess whether or not it's an EPA thing or is it, you know, an administrative directive.
I would suggest we not include that detail in the resolution, to be honest. I would just affirm our organization's commitment to addressing climate change and supporting disadvantaged communities as a sort of base, foundational goal, objective. I'm not sure how to put it, but I would not. I think it should be an ever-living document, actually.
EJ, did you have...
I would just applaud this effort, but I would also ask why we, and this is a rhetorical question, why we took the original action to kind of whitewash and remove all of this language to begin with. I think it's important for us to state that opinion and our position, but I'm seeing more and more, and even the document that we just went through where we're talking about ocean acidification and all of these terms that we are supposedly not allowed to use. It seems, in my opinion, to be contradicting ourselves by doing one thing in one document, another thing in another document, and now making our position clear through a resolution. I agree with the adoption of the resolution, but I think we should have perhaps held our ground prior to this.
Jacob?
Yeah, no, and I given that this is we're referencing a document that was already approved by the EPA, albeit under a different administration, I think that's where that inherent impression of a contradiction comes from, and that's also why I think that it's more likely that it is not going to be an issue versus the document we are presenting for initial review in this new cycle was more of a concern for you know, potential politically charged retribution for using words that they don't like. And so I think that's where the concern comes from. And so I think that there was a reason for that. I think there's also a reason for why this, you know, there is this kind of different set of standards for the, these different documents that are also still going to the EPA. But that being said, glad to hear your, you know, the unanimous support for the resolution. And I think it is important to, you know, have our goals very clear that the work needs to be done. We're going to do anything that needs to happen in a technical aspect to ensure that the work that we that has been happening and will continue to happen to support these communities. And then this resolution, I think, is important to reaffirm to our communities and to our stakeholders that we care about these disadvantaged communities, that we believe in climate change, and that these are factors that are still guiding our work, even if they are not included in some of our documentation to the federal government.
Thank you. And, you know, I agree that ultimately this is foundational for us, and over time, words change in terms of the terms that you use to describe things change over time. And but ultimately, foundationally, the work that we do is very important. And having a resolution like this that exists for our for us as a collective group is important. And yeah, we don't necessarily need to point out to an administration or EPA or any of that. It's more focus on what is the intent of what we're doing. And that's where in the previous item, I mentioned something. I understand sometimes you do the minimum for something to meet a requirement, but ultimately what's more important that within this group, we have that foundation and that we understand what we're doing and why we're doing it. And that we, the work that we do shows that commitment. So I appreciate that. Yes, Jacob.
And I know, Luke, you mentioned that if there were any members that wanted to be more involved, I would just like to volunteer. I'd be happy to help it in any way.
Thank you. I was going to reach out to each of the executive committee members anyway to see.
Okay, great. And in terms of the other items, I think they're straightforward.
Yes, I have some introductions on those as well. So the next item proposed for June 18th is a presentation on the Rocky Reef State of the Bay chapter. So in 2021, the governing board approved over $3 million in Prop 50 funding for six projects. The first project to finish was SCORP, who provided a presentation on their wetlands State of the Bay chapter. That was back in December of 2025. The second study wrapping up is TAC Chair Dan Pondella's project, Assessing the Condition of Rocky Reef Habitats. If anybody is interested in spoilers, the TAC met on Tuesday of this week, and Dan provided some information there. Otherwise, you can wait until June if you approve of this. So staff recommend having them present that chapter in June so the governing board can get that presentation. Any questions or comments on that? Okay, I'll move on to the last item. Tom, I'll ask you to provide some more detail on this. So the other item for June is a proposed presentation for a update on an Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act project. So that's IIJA. So in November 2021, U.S. Congress passed the IIJA, which was previously referred to BIL. And this was passed to invest in the nation's infrastructure and resilience. The IIJA allocated $132 million to the U.S. EPA to be distributed evenly among the 28 national estuary programs for activities that further the implementation of their CCMPs. For the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program, this amounted to $909,800 annually over 5 years. So priorities for these funds include accelerate and more extensively implement the CCMP, to build the adaptive capacity of ecosystems and communities through projects that advance resilience, and to leverage additional resources through collaboration, partnerships, and other funds as appropriate. Some of the projects funded under this initiative are nearing completion, as Tom mentioned before, so staff recommend providing project findings and updates to the governing board. We will only have time for one presentation at the June governing board meeting, so I'll ask Tom now to help us identify the best project to present in June.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. As you said, there are many that are approaching conclusion or have conducted substantive work, and any number of those projects, I think, would be ready for a presentation. The one that has, I think, generated a great deal of interest, and I know I've been contacted by a few folks going, when are we going to hear it, is the beach user and visitorship study that, again, was led by Beacon, supported by a number of other partners from a few consulting firms and local universities. It uses cell phone data. It correlates those cell phone data to actual encounter surveys that were conducted a number of summers ago so that we can understand what a cell phone represents in the way of beach visitorship, and then the address to which that cell phone is assigned allows us to then correlate where these visitors are coming from. And I think it paints a very interesting picture of who utilizes our coastal assets, may help folks understand how these investments are benefiting a number of communities here in the Los Angeles region, Southern California more broadly, and, as is probably no surprise to any of you sitting around the table, the whole world comes to our coastline. There's a lot of very interesting information in there. So that one's tuned up. I've been in touch with the project lead on that, and they would welcome the opportunity to be here on the 18th of June, were we to invite them.
And Tom, could I ask you a question? Recently, there was an LA County Beaches and Harbors Coastal Resilience Initiative meeting where a beach visitorship study was presented. Is this different from that study?
They are related, but there are some distinctions between the two.
Thank you. So it sounds like we've got two connected studies. We have a lot of data on the matter now.
Agreed.
Are there any questions on the items? I will not be at the June meeting, so I actually need someone to help fill in as chair in June, and someone from the executive committee would be the best candidate. Any takers? I'm looking at EJ, Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Could you remind us the date of that
meeting?
It
would be June 18th. I'm not looking at you, Michael. Don't worry.
No. I was just going to say, Martha, it would be an adventure.
I know. Looking at you.
And I'm looking at Luke laughing right now. But, you know, if you want to adventure, I'll see you in June.
I'm happy to assist with the request that Luke help me and hold my hand
throughout it. Of course. Yes. No, thank you. Thank you, EJ. And if anything comes up, just let us know. And this is the agenda for that meeting. There are information items. So I think it should be a pretty straightforward meeting. So thank you. All right. Is there a motion to approve this item?
Make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Great. Okay, Cindy, let's do a roll call vote.
Jamie's hand is up.
Thanks. Jamie, sorry I missed you.
No worries. Just quick comment. If we're limited on, you know, only being able to do one presentation, we've been very interested to hear for a long time about what's going on with the visitor use assessment on the beaches. Definitely it's timely for a lot of the work the RCD is doing on behalf of different community members. So very eager to hear the results of that study and how that's moving forward.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jamie. All right. Can we go ahead with roll call vote?
Yes, absolutely. Once again, random order. Please state your vote when called. Starting with Michael Quill this time.
Yes.
Jamie King?
Yes.
EJ Caldwell?
Yes.
Jacob Berman?
Yes.
Carrie Nichols?
Yes.
Karen Mogus?
Yes.
Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Once again, with 7 yes votes, this motion passes, or this vote passes.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. Coming on to our next item, and I'm glad that we'll have a little bit of time to go over the action plan for Goal 6. Luke, can you introduce?
Thank you, Martha. Yes, we are running a bit behind, so we'll have as much of a discussion as we can on this. This will be an ongoing discussion we will need to have. So this is regarding CCMP Action Plan Goal 6. So back in February, when the action plan was adopted by the governing board, Goal 6 and its associated actions were left a bit undeveloped, if you will, with the intention that the executive committee and governing board would provide more details to this goal over time. So the intention behind this discussion is to start that development. And Goal 6, to refresh everyone's memory, is related to extreme events and emergency response preparation. That includes two actions. Action 6.1, develop and align a regional emergency action plan for Santa Monica Bay and its watershed. And then action 6.2, strengthen community outreach preparedness and education for extreme events. And one note about this actually is, you know, any additions to this or changes to Goal 6 and its language would need to be voted on by the governing board. So, you know, there's flexibility under these actions. Now I'd like to review the scope that was identified in the action plan for this goal. So the intention behind this goal is to protect water quality, public health, habitat, and other designated uses in these emergency situations. And the intention is to address hazards such as sewage spills, oil and chemical spills, fires, harmful algal blooms, floods, and heat. So this is what Goal 6 is meant to address and its associated actions. So my question for you right now is, and again, this is not the first time this question will be asked, but or not the last time it'll be asked, but what role do you think the commission can play in such scenarios? So some ideas that have already been bounced around include maybe like a public notification type role where we can notify folks like members of the public about impacts to the environment or maybe water quality impacts, something like that. Another idea that has been put forward is maybe a connector agency. So during the 2025 Los Angeles fires, there was some confusion between responding agencies. They didn't necessarily know who was monitoring water quality or who was responsible for certain stretches of habitat. So, you know, a role could be identifying everybody's roles and just having we could be a repository for that information in case anybody needs it. So, any thoughts here? And I realize this is a big topic and I'm just kind of asking you without any heads up, but let me know if you have insight.
I think this is a good starting point, Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, one of the goals of the previous slides was also the development of like an action plan. And so kind of additionally, identifying all the roles, I think that this body could be a convening body for those different folks as we prepare for the next possible disaster and be able to then be something that kind of helps synthesize all the different information from these different entities, whether they be public, private, or nonprofit, to ensure that, you know, if we are going to be the ones essentially that are creating that plan, obviously we're not going to be the subject matter experts, but we can be the body that brings it all together and then is the home for it.
Two thoughts. One is that I know that there's the Water Quality Monitoring Council's work group that's happening, but I think the time scale of that is going to happen over a long period of time. And in the meantime, we're sort of vulnerable to thinking about how we would respond again to a disaster in terms of water quality and, you know, who's monitoring what and when and where. So I think there's a role maybe to just start with some lessons learned and to start developing a local plan. And then the other idea is that I know the Blue Ribbon Commission had their updates of the actions that have been addressed that were in that original document, but there are many, many things that didn't even get started that are related to thinking about habitat impacts and things like that. So it might be useful for us to sort of identify those steps and help move them forward or prioritize them.
That was actually going to be a follow-up question I had. is there value to providing recommendations then? I believe the Blue Ribbon Commission report provided recommendations. So is that your recommendation that we we provide maybe some of those recommendations?
Well, so there, yeah, I guess there's recommendations provided. Then there was an update document that lists progress on those recommendations. And my reading of that identified that all of the ocean-related things, all of the things about impacts to habitats have really received very little attention, if any. And I would guess that there are probably academics, other folks who are doing studies, but it just doesn't seem like maybe there's a lot of coordination happening between groups.
So one thing when I see our group, I think of two things. The longevity. This commission has been around since, what, 2002? Many years, right? And we plan on continuing, right? So that's one thing, longevity. We are here. The other thing is people. The people around the table here are people that are knowledgeable, that have access to other people, right? I'll tell you, if I were to have an issue and I need, say, Beaches and Harbor, I know Dan. I can call Dan and I know he will help me communicate with, you know, whoever I need in his organization. But why I'm kind of maybe being simplistic here, but ultimately we are going to be here, right? It'll be helpful that we are a national estuary program. As part of that, there is the importance of water quality and assessing the health of our program, the people in the table. And I know Luke has his kind of, how did you term it? Like connect, you had two bullets on your connector for agencies and the public. I think we can be a resource. We have a website, we have people, the groups. I would say the agencies that participate in our commission, I mean, we have tourism, we have just all different aspects that are would be important in any sort of coordination effort. So I know one of the first things that I thought we can do is just us developing something, a resource in terms of who is our commission, who are the members, and trying to keep that up to date. I know actually within our commission, we do have some turnover, which, you know, it's good, right? It's good to have new ideas, but also sometimes it took me years to kind of figure out what we were doing. But I do think that it would be good if we start off with basic role in terms of, I'm not sure about making recommendations, but hey, if we can be a resource to each other and to the public, I think that could be a very, very good starting point, and trying to keep our membership up to date in terms of who our members are current, and then making sure that we all know that we are resources to each other, so that when there is an issue, we can call each other and help move things forward. So I like the concept of, I don't know if it's connector for agencies or it's more being a resource to ourselves, to other agencies, and potentially to the public, since we do have a website and we have information and we have longevity. That's just my two cents there.
Carrie, could you expand a little bit more about your vision for, I guess based, you know, what were your ideas based from the Blue Ribbon Commission?
Well, I guess in some ways it's maybe even if we just elevate, like, these were things that were recommended that have not received any action, and this commission thinks that they still deserve action, and maybe asking our members who is moving some of these things forward, because I don't think that that's very clear, like, always, like, who's working on what that's related to these topics.
So we can try and see if anybody's willing to put their hat in the ring for certain items.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful, and just and making, like, sort of daylighting who's doing different things too. to address some of those recommendations. And then in encouraging coordination, I think the connector aspect here is really important. And yeah.
Having been the person that came up with the acronym on the Regional Emergency Action Preparedness, I think the preparedness part, and I think EJ's comments earlier, Carrie speaking to it here, like, hey, folks, there is a blue ribbon task force that's been assembled to try to help gather and disseminate, or, you know, gather information on, you know, how we responded, how we should respond, what our concerns are, and getting that out to folks just to let them know that that's happening. I've felt that, you know, the opportunity to be a reverb or the an amplifier for other agencies trying to get information out. Like, hey, folks, we're heading into fire season. Trim back your shrubs. Here's a reminder. We don't have to create that content. I don't think we're necessarily, even in with our broad collection, you know, experts in these matters, but getting those contacts to those resources and reminders to folks that are timely may be a way to help just increase that reach. My sense is that when you talk about emergency to the general public, they would sit there and say 911. And emergency management systems at the county level, at the state level, I think most folks are absent of acknowledging that those resources are there, and we can just try to help get that in front of them.
Great. My last thing to mention here, which we don't need to spend much time on because you can notify me after the meeting, but just looking for documents that we can draw inspiration from, or just ideas from. So I've already identified a few of these. So sanitation agencies in the area, they have their spill response plans, which include, you know, public notifications and monitoring that kicks in response to those spills. An oversight here is maybe like chemical or oil spill response plans. I still have not identified those. I have the Blue Ribbon Commission identified. It sounds like there was a follow-up study, which I need to look at. Then there's the post-fire monitoring work group, which we got a presentation on at the last governing board meeting. And then they mentioned the Feather River Watershed Recovery work group. So I've included that here. But if folks have other documents or plans that you think we should be getting ideas from, please send those to me.
Yeah, Luke, I had the opportunity to serve on the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Oil Spill Prevention and Response Task Force for a decade. I learned a tremendous amount there, and I also became, you know, far more understanding of the resources that are directed at those initiatives and the success that the state of California has realized largely through exercising that plan and that program. They may be a great resource to look at, and looking at HACCP type protocols and things like that, that can be very effective at helping manage these types of these scenarios. And HazWhopper as well. Anybody else have been in HazWhopper? I've HazWhoppered before.
Thank you, Tom. That was it for my discussion.
Can I add one thing that, because I think in your list of hazards to respond to, harmful algal blooms was on there, and I might want to elevate that as something for us to be considering, because it might be happening again soon, and so I think there's maybe an urgent need for us to maybe find information, for example, from the Marine Mammal Care Center, which I know has recently, I think, updated. They're going to be putting signage out at some beaches that were recently approved, but maybe just making sure that our membership is aware of numbers and numbers to call and things, because that is probably an imminent thing. And SKUs.
Sounds like a good starting point then. Thank you.
All right, Luke, so you said that was your last slide, and this will be an item that we will be a recurring item for us so that we can continue having a conversation. If you have any thoughts, ideas after the fact, please send them to Luke so that he can compile. And I know he's going through and trying to identify different things that we can be looking at, and so that we can make progress little by little on this effort that I know a lot of our commission members were excited about. Let's see. So moving on now to member comments and announcements. Are there any comments, announcements at this time?
Jamie online.
Hi, folks. Thanks for the moment. There's a couple just updates that I wanted to share with the team. State Parks and Melina Watts and the North Santa Monica Bay Watershed Group had had a celebration for the success of the Malibu Lagoon a couple weeks back. And it was really interesting, you know, celebrating the success of a project 15 years later, the roles of the partners, including the Bay Foundation and others in that success, and lessons learned that will be applied to these future restoration projects that we're all involved with along the coast. So just wanted to call that out as something that occurred. Specifically for the Topanga Lagoon Restoration Project, which we know has been a big effort by Parks, County, Department of Beaches and Harbor, and Caltrans, there's a significant public meeting that's going to finally update the public on what's been going on since the fires. And that's occurring on May 31st from 1:30 to 3:30 at Pierce College and also online. If you didn't get info about that in your inbox, let me know. That means I need to update our contact list. And we're really trying to make an effort to reach out to communities that would be utilizing this regional resource, recreation and open space resource. You know, any thoughts on how to better reach out for that purpose, we'd love to hear. But what's going to be covered during the meeting is kind of the 60% design for the lagoon restoration, rather the bridge expansion, the 30% design for Topanga Beach Visitor Services, and Parks providing an update on how they're dealing with post-Palisades fire recovering planning. So we invite you all to take part if you're interested, and we're definitely trying to get the word out. On a related note, snorkel surveys are continuing in Malibu and Topanga Creeks. I think we all know steelhead trout has been an imperiled species, but good news, there's been 30 individuals seen in Topanga Creek post-fire, and that's, you know, individuals that hunkered down and hid despite, you know, emergency actions to relocate some of those species to other watersheds, and we've seen 21 young this year, just in the last month for snorkeling. So some positive news of, you know, the kind of greater efforts that partners are doing for the recovery of that species in the Santa Monica Bay. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie. Rosie sent me a flyer for the May 31st event, so I can distribute that to everybody. And Jamie, if I'm not mistaken, you received an award for your help with the Malibu Lagoon restoration. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I did. It was very sweet. It was a shared award just for, and you know, rest in peace, Mark Abramson was a key part of that, as well as Bay Foundation team. So, you know, it feels good to go to a site, see kind of the health and progress 15 years later, and to celebrate everybody's efforts. So thanks, Luke. Yeah, it was a wonderful morning, wonderful moment. And if you haven't been out to that site, it's really neat to take a look at.
Thank you, Jamie, and congratulations, Tom.
Agreed. Jamie had a chance to thank Rich Ambrose on Tuesday at the TAC meeting for the decades of dedication that it took to get that project completed. And just very happy to be hearing of it. Luke, do please send that along. We could reverb the meeting announcement on our socials and get that out to folks. Thank you.
Heal the Bay yesterday had a press conference for the release of our annual beach report card and river report card. So this is looking at water quality from April of last year till March of this year. That's how we look at the year. And water quality did decline across the state of California, and especially in Southern California. But part of that is also because we had more rain this year than we did the previous year. And Santa Monica Pier is once again number two on our beach bummers list, and looking forward to continue working with the City of Santa Monica and the Santa Monica Pier Task Force to try to get it off that list.
Thank you, Carrie. Jacob?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a mention of the National Park Service's LA Coastal Study. The comment period ends this Saturday. And so just wanted to both make sure that for entities and individuals, you know, if they haven't, to submit their comments, and also just to thank Congressmember Ted Lieu and his team for bringing a town hall about the study with the National Park Service to the Venice Neighborhood Council. That was last week, and it was a great presentation on what this, you know, the background as a reminder for folks of how long this has been going on, and, you know, what the goals are of this study in order to bring more resources to protect and preserve our coastline. So.
Thank you, Jacob. So with that, unless anyone has any other comments, we can adjourn at 12:01. And our next governing board meeting is June 18th at the Del Rey Yacht Club. Oh, go ahead.
No, I just really wanted to quickly acknowledge that Bruce Resnick is obviously not able to join us here today. And as we adjourn this meeting, I just want to send my thoughts and prayers to him. I know that he's celebrating successful surgery on his foot, but I know he has a battle ahead of him. And so I hope I share everybody's thoughts that we're thinking of him, and look forward to continuing to work with him as well as the Los Angeles Waterkeeper.
Great.
Now, I just got to say, Bruce, I've been texting Bruce, and he just said to me he was just really touched by how many people had reached out to him. I know he's really, really feeling bad, but he's so optimistic in these texts. So I'm going to relay that. I know he really appreciated it. Thank you.
Oh, no. Thank you. Thank you, EJ. And yes, you know, our next executive committee will be July 16th back here. Thank you, EJ, for hosting us. And yes, we will adjourn in honor of Bruce and wishing him happy and healthy and quick recovery. And with that, thank you all. You all take care, and see you next time.
Thank you. Take care.